are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, New York Giant fans, to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today is Wednesday, November 14th. That means it's Crossover Wednesday. And what a great way to start off Crossover Wednesday. I have James Yarko of Locked On Bucks joining me, and he's going to help me break down the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Giants' next opponent. They visit the Meadowlands, or more specifically, MetLife Stadium this Sunday, 1 o'clock. James, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm not sure if I'm excited about this game or not. It'll be
it's an interesting football, I guess. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Look, there's only, 17 games if you're lucky, you go into the preseason. So, look, win or lose, my attitude is, there's only so many games and I wait so many months for football. And, I'd like it to be a little bit better for the Giants, but, as I'm sure you'd like it to be a little bit better for the Bucks. But, hey, take it as it comes, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we just... Yeah, you grin and bear it. Yeah, that's been the life of a Buccaneers fan for the better part of the last 15 years. High expectations in the offseason to epic disappointment come, Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't have to have 2 years in a row where you were out of it before Halloween like the Giants fans have had, but... what would it be? I mean, it would be nice if we could win every year, but, at least it makes it interesting and it gives you a lot to talk about, right?
That is true. That is very, very true.
All right. So what we're going to do today is we are going to break down the Bucks. We're going to start off segment one, talking about the offense. Segment two, we'll talk about the defense, and then we'll wrap up with segment three, talking about keys to the game. So, James, if you are ready, let's start off with the offense. Now, apparently, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been named starter for this weekend. What do you think went into that decision, and do you like that decision?
I was a big proponent after the Cincinnati game. That Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to give this team the best opportunity to win. Jameis Winston has struggled mightily. I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's a combination of the two. But Jameis Winston has not looked anywhere close to the kind of quarterback that he's been the first few years in the league. So I was perfectly fine with Ryan Fitzpatrick being the starter. This team was sitting at 3-5 with a stretch of very winnable games coming up between Washington, New York, and San Francisco. You figured they should, could, and would beat those three teams, get back over 500, still in the wild card hunt. And with the way Ryan Fitzpatrick started off against the Saints and the Eagles, and even struggling in the first half of the Steelers game, but bringing him back to the brink of victory just to run out of time, it was the right decision. Then you have the Buccaneers go out. Dirk Koetter takes play calling back over, away from Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator who had called the plays allowing Fitzpatrick to flourish, and you have 501 total yards of offense and only 3 points scored. It was the same story as 2017. They could march up and down the field at will with no problem whatsoever until they got in the red zone. They would stall. They would miss field goals. It was a complete disaster. So I believed that Winston, for the rest of the season, should be the starter. And I said that because Dirk Koetter basically signed his own pink slip on Sunday. He took back play calling. They had their worst scoring game of the season. They were the worst they've been all season in the red zone. And that falls on him. Yes, the players have to execute, but Dirk Koetter is a horrendous red zone play caller, and it showed. They had 5 trips to the red zone, and they had 2 called run plays out of 5 trips. You can't have that, especially when Peyton Barber was rushing for almost 4 yards a carry. So I said, you need to start Jameis Winston. You need to figure out what this kid is. If he can get it together and he shows, you know, the style of player that he was the past few years, great. You have that fifth year option. You can move on, you know, into next season with him as your quarterback. If not, all you're doing is giving yourself a better draft position. And you know that Jameis more than likely is going to be out the door along with Dirk Koetter. When they go in their head coaching search, they can sit there and ask these head coaching prospects, look, do you want Jameis Winston on this team or not? If so, fine. You have that option now. If not, fine, move on. But you need to give Winston the rest of this season. So the Fitzpatrick call was a little bit confusing to me.
Sounds it. And up front, you know, obviously with offense, it all starts up front with the offensive line. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys have had some struggles on that offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. Evan Smith was placed on injured reserve on Tuesday. He has been rotating kind of like a tag team with Caleb Beninock at right guard. And that has been by far their worst position along the offensive line. You have Ali Marpet, who just signed the extension. That was the right move. He is the most consistent player on this offensive line. Ryan Jensen has been a disappointment from a playing standpoint. He was a big free agent signing. The Buccaneers have allowed 70 quarterback hits this season. That's the second most in the NFL. And they've allowed 26 sacks, which is 15th in the NFL. It's just something's not right. Donovan Smith, he was looking for the big money contract at left tackle. There's no way he's going to get it.
And you guys also have, from what it seems from the outside looking in, it looks like you have a collection of interesting skill players, but yet there's no rhyme or reason to how those skill players are being used. I mean, how do you see this thing kind of fitting together? And just, you know, who should the Giants be afraid of from those skill players?
Well, that's what's funny about all this is because you had Todd Monken utilizing these skill players beautifully. DeSean Jackson was the leading receiver in the NFL after 3 weeks because Fitzpatrick was hitting him on those deep passes. You had Mike Evans, who was in the top five in the NFL in receiving. You had Chris Godwin, who was a key player in the offense. You had O.J. Howard emerging as an elite tight end, and I stand by that. I said it on our show. O.J. Howard is an elite tight end in the NFL. You have Travis Kelce, you have Zach Ertz, you have a healthy Gronk, and then you have O.J. Howard. He is that good. But this past Sunday, you have 501 yards of offense, and your leading tight end gets two targets, one reception for 15 yards. The other target was intercepted. It just didn't make any sense. And that to me, goes back on the play calling. When Monken and Fitzpatrick were clicking early in the season and they were putting up those points, they're still the number one passing offense as far as yards are concerned in the NFL. Those weapons were utilized appropriately. And now with Dirk Koetter at the helm, you have seen Jacquizz Rodgers was their lead receiver on Sunday with 8 receptions. The week before against Carolina in a 14-point loss, Adam Humphries was the leading receiver. You had DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin combine for 5 receptions, whereas Adam Humphries had 8. Something isn't right there, but there's always that threat of Mike Evans and the speed of DeSean Jackson and the emergence of Chris Godwin and, of course, O.J. Howard if he's getting those snaps. But, I mean, for a tight end as big and as talented and someone who can create the kind of mismatches that O.J. Howard does, to only have a 60% snap count is just ridiculous. It's mind-boggling.
And at receiver, you have a couple guys, Mike Evans and Giants' old friend DeSean Jackson, a couple deep threat guys there. How have they been used in this offense, and who's the bigger threat?
I would say for sure Mike Evans is still the bigger threat. He's still the alpha. He is the guy that is going to get the looks on third down. He's going to get the looks in those clutch, you know, must convert situations. But DeSean Jackson, his speed is always a weapon, and Fitzpatrick has utilized that far better than Winston has in their time together. For whatever reason, that chemistry just isn't there. That connection hasn't been there between DeSean and Jameis. So when Fitzpatrick is under center, DeSean Jackson is a more viable deep threat for the Bucs offense. But as far as the true threat, it's got to be Mike Evans until he shows otherwise. But it would be so nice, you know, in some of these red zone situations, like I mentioned when they went 0-for-5 against Washington, they don't throw these jump balls in the end zone or these back shoulder fades to these massive receivers that they have in Evans, Godwin, and OJ Howard. So being able to see them utilize something like that would be a breath of fresh air for the Bucs. But, you know, Evans is still easily one of the top 5 to 8 receivers in this league. And he should be treated as such, I would think, by the Giants defense.
Drill it down for me. On this Bucs offense, what is the one thing, if you were James Betcher, who is the Giants defensive coordinator, the one thing that you really got to be concerned about and make sure that you are on your game when you face this offense?
You have to have discipline in the secondary. And that's really what it'll boil down to. Mike Tomlin, heading into the Monday night game, said, "We're going to make Ryan Fitzpatrick as uncomfortable as possible." He was bringing blitzes. He was getting guys in Fitzpatrick's face, and it worked for that first half. You know, Fitzpatrick turned the ball over a couple of times because the secondary, you know, the corners, the safeties, they were doing their job. They weren't letting DeSean get behind them. They weren't letting Mike Evans, you know, body them out of position, and they were bringing pressure. So that's going to be the biggest thing, is you have to get Fitzpatrick uncomfortable. And believe it or not, as much as we like to call Fitzpatrick, you know, an old man, quote unquote, or however you want to look at it, he does have some scrambling ability, and he shows that every time he starts. He'll avoid pressure, and he'll scramble and pick up those tough yards, but he will take sacks. And under pressure, he will turn the ball over. So that's going to be the biggest thing for the Giants defense. Bring heavy pressure, you know, as often as possible, and make sure that your secondary is disciplined against a plethora of weapons.
You're listening to Locked On Giants, the Wednesday crossover show with Locked On Bucs co-host James Yarko. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and in segment two, we're going to talk about the defense. So stay with us.
Ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for gambling advice. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win every week, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to use. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy enthusiasts out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000 when you use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the special offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when entering your account to claim your special bonus. MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back, Giant fans. Locked On Giants. I am Patricia Traina, joined by James Yarko, who is the host of Locked On Bucs, and he is breaking down the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Giants' next opponents. They host them Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock kickoff time at MetLife Stadium. And James, let's turn the attention to the defense. Obviously, I got to start with old friend Jason Pierre-Paul. What has he brought to the Tampa Bay defense, that pass rush? And, you know, just how has he taken to that whole system?
Jason Pierre-Paul might go down as the best acquisition that general manager Jason Light has ever made. Jason Pierre-Paul has brought a passion, a leadership, and you know, he's honestly just been a breath of fresh air. This is a team that has not had a player reach double-digit sacks since Simeon Rice. I mean, it's been over a decade since this defense has seen a player hit double-digit sacks. And through nine games, Jason Pierre-Paul is already at eight. He has struggled a little bit the past couple of games. It looks like he's trying to battle through an injury. He doesn't seem to have that burst or that speed or that pursuit that he did early in the season. But I have to imagine that he's going to be more hyped up for this game than any other this season. But it was amazing to me. Dirk Koetter held off on the captain voting by the players until it was a week or two after their bye. And I think he did so for the sake of Jameis Winston. You know, Jameis had missed those first three games. He didn't want there to be any recency bias or anything like that. He wanted to make sure all the guys were in the building before they voted. And it amazed all of us that Jason Pierre-Paul was not voted as a captain. And he's taken some of these losses harder than anyone else. So I love what JPP has brought to this team. I was thrilled when they made the move, and it's done nothing but pay dividends ever since.
Wow. Giant fans are going to hear that, and they're going to say, why couldn't we get that from him? And then, also on that defensive front, you have, I believe, Carl Nassib, Gerald McCoy, who's been a staple, and Vinnie Curry. You know, what about them and what they're, how they're working together, the strength, and, you know, who's the guy that the Giants offensive line really has to be concerned with?
Well, outside of JPP, I would say the guy to be most worried about is Carl Nassib. He is on an absolute heater right now. He had another sack on Sunday. He's up to four this season. He has four in the last, four weeks. And you know, he has been an absolute force. Vinnie Curry has been battling some injuries. He came back a week, then he missed again against Washington. But Carl Nassib has stepped right in, and he stepped up, and he's played extremely well. Gerald McCoy is Gerald McCoy. There's a lot of Buccaneers fans that don't like Gerald McCoy. They think he's too nice. They continuously compare him to Warren Sapp, which is not the kind of player he is. Their big knock on him is, you know, when the game is on the line in the fourth quarter and they need a big stop, Gerald McCoy never gets it. Well, he did on Sunday against Washington, but then the offense screwed it up again. But, you know, you have to account for Gerald McCoy because he is that good of a player. So, you know, outside of people knocking him for basically not being Warren Sapp, this defensive line has plenty of talent. It's just a matter of getting the pressure to the quarterback, which they have struggled with. It comes in bursts. There's no consistency to it. They're either getting pressure on him three plays in a row and forcing a three and out and a punt, or there's no pressure on him for an entire drive, and we see the opposing team march right down the field and score with absolutely no problem. So it's a process, and it's been frustrating, but there is talent there, and I would say the two players to keep an eye on for sure are JPP and Carl Nassib.
Do they do a lot of stunts and twists on that defensive front?
Not a lot, but they do some. One of the things that I've noticed recently with Carl Nassib is they'll line him up almost as a linebacker. You'll see him standing to blitz through one of the gaps rather than rushing from the outside. Now, if Vinnie Curry is out again, he's going to be down on the defensive end, and you know, it's not likely that they're going to move him around too much. But when Vinnie Curry is in, you know, they have that flexibility to kind of play with and bring him as an additional pass rusher, which has helped. But for the most part, it's with Brenson Buckner as the defensive line coach, it's been beat the man in front of you, get through and get to the quarterback.
Now, in the linebacker unit, I believe I saw that Lavonte David is dealing with a knee injury. Is that correct?
Yeah, he has a sprained MCL. He left the game Sunday for a few plays. I believe it was four or six plays. And those are the only snaps that he's missed all year. So his status is in question for the weekend. And with a team that's already lost Quan Alexander for the season, if Lavonte David were to go down as well, that's real bad news for a defense that already struggles.
I was going to say, what do they miss when Levante David isn't in that lineup? What does he, you know, do well that just takes that unit to the next level?
He is the guy that no matter where the ball is, you see him on the screen. Yeah, he flies to the ball, incredible speed, incredible instincts. He's one of the few players. Another very frustrating thing about this defense is not being able to get takeaways. He's one of the few players on this team that when he goes for a tackle, he's not just trying to tackle. He's trying to rip the ball out of your hands. He's trying to force those turnovers. His instincts, his leadership, and his speed are just, they're unmatched on this defense. And I love Quan Alexander, and I think he's going to be a great player, but he still has plenty of room to grow and plenty of room to learn. When it comes to Levante David, this is a guy that has, he's tied for the most fumble recoveries since 2012. I believe he's second in forced fumbles since 2012. He's a big impact guy. And there was, I believe it was the Browns game where the Bucs defense needed a stop and Levante David single-handedly forced Cleveland to punt. He had the tackle on three consecutive plays to get the ball back for the offense. And that's just the kind of guy he is. So if he misses, it's going to hurt the defense really, really bad.
And in the secondary, it looks like you have a May-December type of duo back there in Brent Grimes, who is 35 years old, I think, and Carlton Davis. What have you seen from those two?
Virtually nothing. That's the kindest way to put it. Brent Grimes is basically at this point just collecting a paycheck. They talked him out of retirement to come back, felt they were on the cusp of something. And he looks like a guy that's out there that doesn't want to be out there and is just collecting his money. Carlton Davis has shown flashes. Yeah. He is a rookie. He is a second round pick. He was the Bucs' fourth draft pick this season, or this past draft. And he's shown flashes, but he still makes some of those rookie mistakes that you kind of expect. But he's a big body guy. He likes to be physical. He likes to play that press coverage. And if he's the one matched up with Odell Beckham Jr., it's going to be a good day for Odell Beckham just because he doesn't quite have that speed yet. And Odell Beckham has just jaw-dropping moments where he'll be able to take advantage of the mismatch. I mean, there's nobody on this Bucs defense that can match up with Odell. So yeah, it's been tough for this Bucs secondary. They have another rookie in MJ Stewart who has missed the past couple weeks with an injury. So you're looking at guys like JV and Elliott stepping in. You have Ryan Smith stepping in. It's been a work in progress, but you know, they started off so far behind the eight ball with Mike Smith being the one coordinating this defense and losing Vernon Hargraves in the first half of the first game to a season-ending injury. There's a reason why the Bucs have allowed, you know, the second most yards in the NFL and are on pace to be the worst scoring defense in the history of the league.
Wow. But it looks like the strength of that defensive secondary might be your safeties, Jordan Whitehead and Justin Evans, two guys that can get deep and I think have enough speed to keep up with the Odell Beckhams and the Sterling Shepherds. I mean, how do you see them factoring into the mix?
Justin Evans, I think, is a budding star in this league. He has playmaking ability. He makes those big hits within the confines of the rules. In fact, he's the last player on this defense to force a defensive takeaway, and that was an interception of Ben Roethlisberger in week three. You know, that's how long it's been since this defense actually got an interception or a fumble recovery. So he's in his second season. You've seen the growth. You've seen how he's kind of developing in the game. Still has room to improve, but he could be a very, very good safety in this division for a long time. And Jordan Whitehead, again, he's another guy who he's a rookie. He was a fourth round pick. You know, there's a lot of Buccaneers fans that are still mad at the selection of Vita Vea in the first round over Derwin James. Of course, being in Tampa Bay, there's a strong Florida State contingency down there. And, you know, they want Florida State players every year. You know, it was Jameis when he was the pick. It was Dalvin Cook. It was Jalen Ramsey. It was, you know, and it was Derwin James. There's always that one. We have to have this Florida State player. And Derwin James was that guy. So they look at Jordan Whitehead and they're like, well, Derwin James is doing all this stuff in Los Angeles. Why didn't we take him? We're stuck with Jordan Whitehead. Whitehead has made some great plays. He's had some key pass breakups, but he's also had some rookie mistakes. He had a pass interference in the end zone. You know, they put a team right there on the 1 yard line. It's a growing pains thing with him, and it's a process, but you see the raw talent there. You see what it can turn into if they just had the right people in place to coach him up.
You're listening to Locked On Giants. It's the Wednesday crossover show with James Yarko, host of Locked On Bucks. We're going to take our final break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about keys to the game, intangibles, and we're going to get James to make a prediction. So stay with us.
The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NFL Net to get all the latest breaking news and game highlights from the Locked On Podcast Network NFL hosts, all on one convenient feed. On Instagram, Locked On NFL Net gives you the biggest stories, including audio cuts as provided by the various Locked On NFL team hosts. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL Net on both Twitter and Instagram to get your daily fill of the NFL.
Welcome back, Giant fans. Locked On Giants, Patricia Traina with James Yarko. He is the host of Locked On Bucks, and this is the crossover show. And James has been breaking down the Bucks for us. The Bucks come into the Meadowlands on Sunday, 1 o'clock, to face the Giants, who are going to look to make it 2 in a row, if at all possible. And James, let's look at some of the intangibles in this weekend's matchup. What do you think are the ones that really nobody's going to be talking about, that people should be talking about and paying attention to?
I would say for the Bucs, it's going to be Peyton Barber. He's really started to play well these past couple weeks. Yeah, against the Redskins, he was getting almost 4 yards a carry. For whatever reason, they went away from him to go to Jacquizz Rodgers in the passing game. But you look at Tampa's offense and how spectacular they can be and the weapons that they have, and Peyton Barber seems to be that forgotten guy. If Dirk Cutter truly is a man of his word, yeah, and he's, you know, wants to establish the run, which we actually discussed on our show on Tuesday, that, you know, that may not actually be the case, but Peyton Barber is going to get opportunity. And if he starts to get going and he's running the way he did against Washington, he's going to put the Bucs in a position to succeed. So that's going to be one of the guys that no one talks about that could have a major, major impact on the outcome of this game.
And in terms of the keys, give me your 3 keys to a Bucs win.
Red zone efficiency, number one. Yeah, against Washington, 5 trips to the red zone, you come away with 3 points. There were 2 turnovers, 2 missed field goals. You can't have that. You have to execute in the red zone. Number two is getting pressure on Eli Manning. This is an offensive line in New York that has allowed 63 quarterback hits. They've allowed the 3rd most sacks in the NFL with 32. And we've seen Eli struggle, and a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, well, maybe Ben McAdoo wasn't wrong in benching Eli. Well, you can't really put it all on Eli when he has, you know, 1.5 seconds to throw the ball because the offensive line can't stop anybody. So when you have pass rushers like JPP, like Carl Nassib, you have a rookie in Vita Vea that hasn't quite put it all together yet, but he's so strong and he's so powerful that he can just manhandle whoever's in front of him and open up gaps for linebackers to come through on blitzes. You have to get that pressure early and often and take Eli off of his game. I even saw last night, you know, something as simple as a dump off bounced right off of Saquon Barkley and was intercepted. You know, that's something that the Buccaneers haven't been able to take advantage of for the past 6 games. They have to find a way to make that happen, and it starts with pressure up front. The third thing is utilizing the weapons that they have appropriately. use OJ Howard. You know, he's a mismatch for anyone on the New York Giants. He's probably the biggest human being I have ever seen in person. There's no linebacker that's going to be able to cover him when he's out there running routes. He's going to be bigger than any corner that goes over to him. You have to utilize that matchup, and they did so well all season long up until last week. They have to get back to it. You have to utilize DeSean Jackson more and not just on the deep passes. You need to get him those quick passes and let him make plays with his legs. And for Mike Evans, when you get in that red zone, you have to throw those back shoulder fades. You have to throw those jump balls, because Mike Evans is going to win those 99 times out of 100. So it's utilizing those weapons properly that the Bucs haven't done in the past couple of games, and it's resulted in losses. If they're going to get this thing back on track, if they're going to give themselves a chance, it's going to have to take 7 wins in a row to do that, starting with New York. If you're going to make that happen, you have to use the weapons the right way.
I'm gathering that the O.J. Howard matchup against the Giants linebackers and safeties, especially after seeing what George Kittle did against the Giant defense on Monday night, I'm gathering that that's probably one of the key matchups. From the other side, though, what matchup do the Giants pose that maybe gives you concern or makes you think, this is going to be a tough one to make for a long afternoon for the Bucs?
Well, I touched on it on the last segment. It has to be Odell Beckham Jr. against anyone in this secondary. He's such a weapon. He's a deep threat. He can take those short passes and go 70 yards with no problem. He makes incredible catches. He's a mismatch against pretty much every defense in the NFL. And then Saquon Barkley. I wasn't nearly as high on Saquon as a lot of people were heading into the draft. I was on record as saying I would like the Bucs to go after Darius Geis. Yeah, the Bucs were in need of a running back, and I felt that Darius Geis was more of the style of running back that I would want to have in the NFL. And Saquon Barkley, week after week after week, has done nothing but make me eat crow. He's an incredible talent to watch. He's not just a runner. He's a threat in the passing game, and he can make something out of nothing. He's so much fun to watch. Hopefully, I don't have to sit there and talk about how great he is all day on Sunday as he's chewing up the defense. But if Lavonte David misses this game, and you have the linebacking crew of Riley Bulla and Adarius Taylor and Devontae Bond, Saquon Barkley might have the highest rushing total of his career, you know, up to this point, because it'll be on Lavonte to be the guy to shut down Saquon. If Lavonte misses, Barkley is in for a massive day.
Wow, that would be something else. And, you know, speaking of Barkley and whatnot, for our listeners who might be planning to play fantasy football, is there, you know, I would assume O.J. Howard obviously would be a good matchup or a good add to their fantasy football teams. But is there anybody else amongst the skill players that you would suggest they consider as maybe, I don't know, a flex player or a number two or number three option?
Well, yeah, I mean, outside of the obvious choices in Barkley and Odell, you know, for the Giants, or Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, for the Bucs, and Ryan Fitzpatrick may not even be the most obvious of choices, but this is a guy who threw for 400 yards, turned the ball over 3 times, didn't get in the end zone, still scored 20 fantasy points. Yeah, he's been a fantasy monster. That's only the second time this season that he has scored less than 25 points in a game, outside of the Bears game where he only played a half. But then against Cincinnati, he only played a quarter and a half and still scored over 25 points. So, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you're in need of streaming a quarterback, he would be a great play. And the other guy I look for is Sterling Shepard. You know, the Bucs pass defense, again, it's not good. The secondary has issues. And if they really focus all their efforts on doubling Odell Beckham, making sure that he's not the one to beat them, Sterling Shepard might get a lot of love. And one more would be, the tight end for the Giants.
Evan Engram.
Engram, thank you. I wanted to say Ebron, but I'm like, no, he's in Indianapolis. Evan Engram, you know, the Bucs haven't been great against the tight end. Engram might have a pretty pretty hefty workday. And for fantasy players, they know that outside of those top four or five guys, those really, you know, top tier players, every fantasy tight end is basically touchdown dependent. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see Ingram get a touchdown in the red zone, because again, you know, with Quan Alexander being out, and then if Levante misses, Ingram could provide some pretty big mismatches for the Giants offense.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Give me your prediction for Sunday's game.
I'm going to predict a tie. No. shockingly enough, and I'll put an asterisk next to my own pick here. I'm going into this game assuming that Todd Monken is going to get play calling back. With as poorly as the team did under Cutter's play calling, I don't know if he's going to be, you know, admit defeat and say, you know, we need to put it back in the hands of Monken. If they do, I think the Buccaneers win this game, but not by a lot. I mean, it's going to be close. I would say Tampa Bay wins 31-30, thanks to a last-second field goal from new kicker Cairo Santos. I think it'll be one of those games where whoever has the ball, whoever has the ball last is going to win. It's going to be one of those types of games. But if Dirk Cutter puts the play calling on himself again, I think we'll be in for a very different outcome and be looking at the Giants winning their second game in a row.
That would be nice. I know a lot of Giant fans would like that. All right. So on that note, want to thank you so much for breaking down the Bucks. Excellent job, Giant fans. I don't know about you, but I feel better about my knowledge about the Bucks, where to go with writing previews and stuff like that. Outstanding job, as always, James. Tell everybody where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can check out everything that I'm doing over at BucksNation.com and follow along on Twitter at @JYarko_Bucks and at @LockedOnBucks.
Okay, Giant fans, and make sure you check out Locked On Bucks, because I'm going to be breaking down the Giants with James on his show. And also make sure you tune in tomorrow on Locked On Giants. We're going to have Twitter Thursday. If you haven't already done so, get your questions into me. You can email them to LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet them to me at Patricia_Traina. And make sure you use the hashtag AskPTrain. Don't forget Emery Hunt, a football game plan, is going to be on with me on Thursday. He's going to be handling your draft questions because he's been scouting those prospects. So lots still coming up. We'll call it a show. Thanks to James Yarko, and we'll talk to you soon.